The silence that followed was worse than the noise. For 3 days, the hollow held its breath. The wind did not blow. The wheat did not sway. Even the insects seemed to have retreated beneath the soil, leaving the air unnervingly still, as though the world itself were waiting for a verdict. Ilse did not sleep. She sat on the floorboards of the cottage, her back against the cold stone wall, her legs drawn up beneath her, watching the door. Every creak of the timber, every shift of the settling foundation, made her head snap up, her hand drifting instinctively toward the knife she kept in her belt. Nothing came. Only the silence and the distant, ghostly hum of the fourth waystone, vibrating through the earth like a dying pulse. On the fourth morning, the silence broke. It did not break with a roar or a shout or the clash of iron. It broke with the sound of hooves heavy, rhythmic, deliberate the tramp of warhorses on hard-packed earth. They came from the south, from the direction of the Baron's keep. A column of 20 riders, clad in the gray wool and iron plates of the Baron's guard, at their head rode Torvin. He wore no helmet. His black hair was tied back in a severe knot, his face unreadable, his posture rigid in the saddle. He did not look at the cottage. He did not look at the fields. He looked only at the road, his eyes scanning the cracked stones with the detached interest of a man inspecting a ledger entry. Ilse opened the door. She did not run to meet them, nor did she hide. She walked out onto the farmyard, her boots crunching on the gravel, her hands hanging loose at her sides. She looked tired, hollowed out, yet she stood straight with her chin lifted, her gray eyes fixed on Torvin as he reined in his horse 10 paces from the gate. The riders fanned out, forming a loose semicircle behind him. Their spears were grounded, but their hands rested on the hilts of their swords. The smell of horse sweat and oiled leather drifted across the yard, mixing with the scent of damp earth and wood smoke. Torvin dismounted. He did not offer a greeting. He did not ask after her health. He simply walked to the gate, his boots heavy on the stones, and stopped. He looked at Ilse. He looked at the cottage. He looked at the road. "You held the line," he said. His voice was flat, devoid of triumph or contempt. It was the voice of a man stating a fact that had already been recorded. "I held what was mine," Ilse said. Torvin nodded slowly. He reached into his tunic and withdrew a scroll. It was sealed with Wax the Baron's seal, a black raven on a field of crimson. He did not hand it to her. He held it out, dangling it from 2 fingers, as if it were something dirty. "The Baron acknowledges your service," Torvin said. "The road is secure. The travelers are denied. The territory is pacified." Ilse said nothing. She watched the scroll swing gently in the still air. Ilse felt the words hit her like physical blows. One by one, heavy, inescapable. The debt, the money she had borrowed to buy seed, the money she had borrowed to fix the roof, the money she had borrowed because the harvest had failed and the wheat had turned gray and brittle before it could ripen. 50 crowns, a sum that might as well have been a mountain. He unrolled the scroll an inch, the wax cracked. 50 crowns, he said, as though the number were something unpleasant he had to swallow. Still unpaid. He rolled it back up, slow, deliberate. "Interest has been counting, land's the collateral." "It is the Baron's land," Torvin corrected. "Your uncle held it by grace, you hold it by default, the grace has expired." He stepped closer. He was taller than she remembered, or perhaps she was smaller. She could smell the iron on his armor, the sharp tang of sweat, the metallic scent of blood that wasn't his. "You have until sundown to vacate the premises," Torvin said. "The men will remain here. They will oversee the transfer of possession. Any resistance will be treated as treason." Ilse watched the men behind him. They were young, too young. Boys, really, with beards painted on their faces, with eyes that darted nervously to the woods, to the road, to the stones. Fear clung to them like cold sweat. Not of her, of something else, of the silence, of the hum. "And the road?" Ilse asked. Torvin smiled. It was a thin, cruel thing. "The road is the Baron's responsibility now. We will ensure it remains contained." He turned and walked back to his horse. He mounted with practiced ease. He did not look back. "Move," he said to the men. "Clear the cottage." The riders dismounted. They moved toward the cottage with the clumsy aggression of men who had been told they were allowed to break things. One of them kicked over a bucket of water. Another smashed a clay pot against the wall. The shards flew outward, glittering in the weak sunlight. Ilse did not move. She stood in the yard, watching them breach her home, watching them violate the space where her daughter had slept, where her uncle had died, where she had survived. She wanted to scream. She wanted to run at them, to throw herself against their armor, to bite and claw and tear. But she was exhausted. She was broken. And she knew, with a cold, sinking certainty, that it would not matter. Inside, the cottage was a wreck. Drawers were pulled out, their contents scattered across the floor. Books were torn from the shelves. The hearth was overturned, the ashes spilled across the stones. And in the corner, where Alara's pallet had been, there was only empty space. Ilse walked inside. The men followed her, their boots loud on the floorboards, their laughter harsh and jarring. "Where is she?" Ilse asked. Her voice was quiet, too quiet. The leader of the men, a boy with a scar across his cheek, shrugged. "Gone. We searched. Nothing here but an old woman and a lot of dust." "Old woman," the words stung. She was 26. She was the keeper of the road. She was the one who had held back the dark. "Where did she go?" Ilse asked. "No idea," the boy said. He kicked a chair over. "Maybe she ran, maybe she hid, doesn't matter. The Baron's orders are clear. Empty the house." Ilse looked at him. She looked at his eyes. They were wide. Terrified, he was looking past her. At the window, at the road, at the stones. "What is it?" she whispered. The boy didn't answer. He just shook his head. "Just get out," he said. "Please, just get out." Ilse turned and walked to the door. She stepped outside. The sun was beginning to dip below the ridge, casting long shadows across the yard. The wheat stood still. The air was cold. The hum of the stones was faint, a vibration so low it was almost imperceptible, a thrumming in the bones rather than the ears. Torvin was watching her from his saddle. He did not speak. He simply waited. Ilse looked at the cottage, at the broken windows, at the scattered books, at the overturned hearth. She looked at the road, at the fourth waystone, standing tall and cold in the distance, its surface cracked, its hum fraying. She looked at the hills beyond, at the north. Alara was gone. The realization did not come as a shock. It came as a relief, a terrible, crushing relief. Alara was safe, somewhere out there, in the world beyond the road, alive, breathing, unharmed. Ilse closed her eyes. She let the tears come. They were hot and fast, tracking through the dirt on her face, dripping off her chin. She did not wipe them away. She let them fall. She let the grief wash over her, cold and clean, scouring her hollowed-out bones. When she opened her eyes, the sun was gone. The shadows had lengthened, swallowing the yard, the fields, the road. The stones were dark shapes against the twilight, indistinguishable from the rocks and the trees. Only the hum remained, a faint, persistent vibration in the earth, a reminder that something still held. Torvin turned his horse. He looked at Ilse one last time. His expression was unreadable, not cruel, not kind, just empty. "Goodbye, Ilse," he said. And then he turned and rode away. The column of riders followed him, their hooves drumming on the road, their armor clinking, their voices fading into the distance. The dust they kicked up hung in the air, swirling in the twilight, obscuring the road, obscuring the stones, obscuring the path north. Ilse stood alone in the yard. The cottage was dark behind her. The wind began to blow, cold and biting, carrying the scent of snow. She wrapped her arms around herself. She shivered. She stood still. The road was broken. The farm was lost. The daughter was gone. But the stones still hummed. The stones' hum settled into a lower, steadier pitch, a vibration that traveled up through the cracked earth and into her bones, grounding her against the encroaching dark that held its breath at the edge of the road.